Turning back, she could see Marcos calmly standing, his blaster still leveled.
He should have tried to appeal to me as a brother. That worked all our lives, and even now I would have listened.
Jack rushed past the sec boss to Mildred.
You okay?
Yeah, at least I think so. Shit, Jack. Clinically speaking, I think this would be shock.
Jack led her back to the edge of the riverbank, where Sunita now stood, shaking her head.
What do we do with their remains?
Figure we leave these for carrion. Come back in daylight and get the treasure for your father.
Yes, this should be done.
Mildred walked back to where Marcos was standing, looking down on the corpse of his brother.
You hear that?
Yes. Yes, I have no business here. Not now.
Mildred took his arm, and they walked back to Jack and Sunita. The leader's daughter was trying not to look at Elias's mutilated corpse. Jack indicated that they should leave, and gently guided her past the corpse. Marcos didn't look back. The moon was beginning to wane, sunrise less than an hour away. In the cold light of morning, it was easier for both Sunita and Marcos to return to the riverbank. Jack, Ryan, and JB preceded them with three of the SEC force to bury the corpses of Elias and Chan, which showed signs of investigation from the predators of the woods. By the time the main party had arrived, the bodies were beneath the soil. Marcos didn't speak of them as he asked Mildred for all the information regarding access to the treasure that she had been told by Barris. Going across to the cave, Marcos entered with two of his men and Ryan, JB, and Jack. The wiry albino hunter was the one chosen to take the narrow route into the inner cave, where the treasure had been secured. When he triggered the entrance mechanism, it was easy to see why the leader had wished the treasure to be recovered before the Pilatans left their island home. Carefully wrapped to provide as much protection as possible, there were precious metals and jewels, both loose and in settings. There was also paper jack, which was now useless in a post-Skydark world. There was also much mysterious pre-dark technology. It took little more than an hour to remove the treasure from the cave and to take it across the short distance to the shore, where Sunita and Mildred watched as it was unwrapped. Some of it would be useful on the mainland, but it seemed very little for Elias and Chan to risk and lose their lives over, and very little to justify Marcus's loss. For the SEC boss had been quiet and morose since the previous night. It was as though all he had believed had been proven false. The ideals that ruled his life had been those espoused by his brother. A brother who he thought had loved him, but had only used him for his own purposes. They took the treasure back to the Ville, where Sunita showed it to her father, and the treachery of Elias and Chan was revealed. Barris was just glad to see the treasure recovered in time for the exodus. It was only a few hours before the leader joined his ancestors. In the days that followed the death of the leader, the preparations for the journey to the Whitelands were subdued. Sunita assumed the leader's role in total, and Marcos backed her in a public address in which he condemned his brother for his hypocrisy. He also stated that he would back Sunita fully. His personal views could not come before the best viable future for the Pilatans. As he spoke, Mildred could see that he was a troubled soul, but he had resisted all attempts she had made to see him and talk to him about what had happened, and about their relationship, such as it had been. Sunita and Mildred did, however, speak about marriage. The leader's daughter had met Marcos to discuss her father's intention of arranging her marriage. Before Sunita had a chance to speak, the SEC boss had sardonically pointed out that as for the notion of his marrying her, well, that had been at the instigation of his brother, who had wished to use him as a political tool. The idea of marrying for the pursuit of power was one that he found distasteful, and with all respect to the new leader, he would be only too glad if the subject was never again raised. So, work continued. The deaths of Elias and Chan had shown the divisions between the peoples of Pilatu as artificial, and even the most hardened of separatists had worked harder to prepare for the exodus. Their views remained unchanged, but they would fight for their beliefs later, when the Pilatans had gained a new homeland that was more able to support them. The boats were finished and loaded. The adobe homes were stripped of all but the barest last-minute essentials. The animals were loaded during the final day, and the night was given to muted celebrations. Muted because of the arduous journey ahead. muted because the islanders were sad to be leaving their home after so many generations. And yet there was a mood of optimism engendered by the gaining of the treasure, which would provide valuable Jack and barter in the new world, and by the accession of a new leader who would prove to be strong. Barris had been a good man, but his long illness and decline had left the Ville in limbo for some while. On the morrow, the journey would begin. But before this, there were still matters to be addressed. Dean had been keeping his head down and getting on with the work allotted to him, but he was obviously preoccupied. Ryan had tried to talk to him, but the youngster had been reticent to speak to his father. Doc had also tried. He had always been able to converse with the youth, but even he could only gain a vague admission from Dean that something had been troubling him. Dean was sitting at the back of the adobe dwelling they had called home for the past few weeks, staring out into the night. He had crept away from the celebrations in the center of the Ville and was staring up at the sky, so preoccupied that he didn't hear Christy approach. He started when she spoke.
You want to watch that. It could be dangerous.
Sorry. I guess I was thinking.
Well, that can be dangerous as well. Too much thinking. Especially when it cuts you off from everyone. Maybe it's best then to share the thoughts, make them seem less heavy.
I don't know. It sounds kind of stupid to me, so maybe you'll think I've gone as crazy as Doc if I tell you.
I'm not sure if that's even possible, but tell me anyway. It won't go any further, and it may just help.
Okay. Here goes.
He began to tell her about the dreams he'd had since the Matran's jump.
They seem... hot pipe. It seems like sometimes the dreams are real, and this is the dream. And that feels really weird. And that's not all.
Christy listened closely. Dean seemed on the verge of saying something important, but was having trouble finding the right words.
Sometimes it feels to me like Rona's still alive, and that I have to find her. That it's some kind of message. And being here is a part of that, because I've seen what it's like to have family and to belong.
And you don't feel that we're your family and that you belong with us?
No. Yes. I mean, geez. You, Dad, Doc, Jack, all of you are family. But it's different with Rona. I was with her from when I was small. I didn't even know my dad until after I was taken from the Brody School. That time before, I was only just getting to know him. All of you. But I don't belong any more than any of us belong. Not like Mildred does with these people.
But, sweetheart, Mildred's chosen to go with us and stay with us once we reach the mainland. She's decided that she belongs more with us.
Dean had a notion that Mildred's decision was based on something a little more personal than Christy would have him believe, but said nothing of this.
Yeah, but she's had a chance to make that choice. Until I find out what happened to Rona, then I'll never know.
I thought Sharona had rad sickness cancer and was dying. That was why she entrusted you...
I know. But I've just got this feeling that she's still alive. A feeling that I can't explain. But I know I've got to do something about it.
Okay. Well, when you've got to do something like this, then you've just got to. But wait until we get over the water, and promise me you'll talk about it with your father.
Yeah. I know I've got to talk to him about it, and I promise I'll do it then.